Well, excellent. Don't go away. Okay, so let's get started anyway. We have reached the quorum of three students, and today I want to talk about tries and Patricia tries, which are by themselves pretty obvious data structures, but they lend themselves very well to demonstrating a data refinement. So what? If you can find all the Isabel files, all the Isabel developments in those two files in the repository. So what are these things? A try, and here starts the difficulty: how to pronounce this word. The thing was coined to resemble the word retrieval, and so it's supposed to be pronounced tree, but of course that leads to endless confusion if you pronounce that word tree in a data structure lesson, so I'll pronounce it try. So what's the idea? The idea is that the search keys are lists, and that rather than considering the whole search, the whole key all the time, you just consider one element of the list after the other. And that means when you're in a particular node, you then look at the next element in your list, and then you branch to the respective sub-node that corresponds to that element of the list. So the elements could be ASCII characters, but they could also just be Boolean values. And here's a simple graphical example of a try where we use as list elements letters. And each node branches according to one letter. So here we have one subtry with where the list starts with A, and one subtry where the list starts with C. These are also called prefix trees sometimes, which is a very nice descriptive name, because they when you go along the branch of a prefix tree, you really read the prefix of some string character by character. And what do we have as next one? Here we have L, and here we have N, and then we have another L here, and then a leaf, and then we have a D here, and a leaf, and what's the C? Well, after the C comes an A, and then we have two alternatives, an N and an R. And the boxes are supposed to be leaves, and everything else is internal nodes, and this this try stores words, and so this stores the words all can and car. So all the words you can get by running from the root to a leaf. Well, no, not quite. There's also the word an, and that's not a leaf, because that's a prefix of another word, so we need another marker here saying this is also the end of a word, although it's in the middle of the tree. So this is what these tries generally look like. I hope that's intuitive enough. So this is the, we only consider binary tries here, so we're listing, we're indexing by lists of Booleans, and later on we will refine this to words in the computer architecture sense. So here a try is either leave one of these square boxes, or it's a node that contains an indication whether this is also an internal terminal node. So that means that here we have put a circle around it, then this marker here is true, and of course it will have to contain it also contains pointers to two subtrees, subtries, and the convention will be that this one represents the bit zero, and this one represents the prefix one, or true and false, left, true, right. So I'm not going to show you a try index with booleans, they just look the same, except that the edges are labeled by true and false. So what is a Patricia try? That's simply a compressed try, where if you have a sequence of edges where there's no branching, then you compress them into one edge. So here we have an example. These two, the C and the A, there's no branching here, so we could compress this into one one edge, and similarly here with the LL. And so the try, the Patricia try that corresponds to this would look like this. Here again we have the A, then we have down there to the leaf we have LL, then we have N, this is an internal node, and then we have D and the box, and here we have CA, and then the branch according to N and R. So that would be a Patricia try. And now, of course, you can tell it gets more difficult given some given some input key to locate the right branch, because now you have to search not just on individual letters like up there, but there could be whole strings in each on each edge. So that raises the question, how would you actually represent this mapping at each edge to the subtries? I'm avoiding that question in the general case. We're just looking at Boolean strings, and then it becomes simpler because you just have this two-way branching. So,
how do you insert an application, especially if I have compressed edge?
Then it may release it. Then you may have to split it. Yeah. So the representation is pretty similar. A Patricia try has a leaf constructor and a node constructor, where now you have this prefix here, a list of booleans that are shared, that's the shared prefix by all the subtries in here, and this bool here is again just an indication of whether this is also the end of a word already that has a shared prefix with other words, with the words down there. So this boolean marker here or here. Yeah, and the name is really weird. So both of these data structures are very old because they're fairly easy to come up with as an idea. Ah, great, now it doesn't come back to life. Oh no, it does. It just takes a moment. So viel zur Technik. Ich benutze nicht freiwillig jetzt den Projektor, sondern der hier will nicht mehr. Vor ein paar Tagen hat er noch zumindest gesagt, kein Signal. Heute Morgen ist er gar nicht mehr angegangen. So, as I was about to say, both of these data structures are fairly old. They are from the, I think one of them, the Patricia thing may even be from the 50s, late 50s, and the other one from the 60s. So I think they were, I'm not sure whether they were independently reinvented or invented. I suspect so. Okay. Projector is back. So let's continue. And what I now want to focus on is this data refinement, as it's called, the transition from the original structure of tries to then Patricia tries and then even further. And so this will be an exercise in data refinement, in the stepwise development or optimization of a data structure. And just very briefly, basics of data refinement is in essence, we have already seen data refinement when we had the transition from the abstract data structure of a set to the concrete implementation as a tree. And now we're taking this further by making this a multi-step approach and also looking at the general situation, not just saying, oh, we have a tree and a set. So in general, what you have an abstract type A and a concrete type C, and you want to implement the type A by the type C, and also the type C typically comes with an invariant, that is, only some of the elements of the type C are actually used in the representation, and the invariant characterizes which of the elements are actually used and which are not reachable. And then how do you do this? You have to define an abstraction function that maps the concrete data structure to the abstract data structure. You have to implement each interface function F on the abstract level by some corresponding function implementation, actually, on the concrete level. And then you have to prove for each function on the concrete level that it implements the abstract function, and this is the general property that you have to prove, that if you have an element of the concrete data structure that satisfies the invariant and you operate with some operation F on that concrete element and then abstract it to the abstract level, then that's the same as first abstracting the data structure and then operating with the abstract function on it. So that's the general commuting diagram that you have here. If you have the A level and the C level, then it shouldn't make any difference whether you first have a concrete representation and operate on it with F and then abstract it with our abstraction function, or whether you first abstract it and then operate on it with the abstract operation. And we have to show that each operation preserves the invariant, does not lead outside this subset of elements that the invariant carves out. And this is a special case, this writing it like this, because the function f may have multiple arguments. Here we've just assumed it's just got a single argument, the data type in that we're implementing, but it'll typically have other arguments as well. And also, the function may return values that are not of the type that you're trying to implement. Here we are assuming if you apply the abstraction function to the result of the operation, that means we're assuming that the operation delivers something of the abstract type, and the concrete type, and not some auxiliary value like a Boolean. You can specialize this law. So if the result of the function f happens to be, say, a Boolean value, then of course you don't abstract here. You just get rid of the abstraction function. You just say, oh, the Boolean value that you get out of the concrete implementation must be the same Boolean value that you get out of the abstract function applied to the abstracted abstracted data structure. So this is the general blueprint that you have to follow when you prove that such a refinement step from an abstract to a concrete data type is correct. And when I say abstract and concrete, that is a relative term. So concrete does not necessarily mean it has to be executable. There's no question of executability here. You can do that on any level. It may still contain mathematical concepts that are not directly executable. But if you, the aim, of course, is that you may do this multiple times, and eventually you get something that's concrete enough that you can just export it to a programming language. So you may need these multiple refinement steps in order to reduce the complexity. It's always tempting to go in one step from the abstract to the concrete type, but if the gap, the conceptual gap is big, then these proofs tend to be difficult, and then it's better to go in several smaller steps. So that's the general idea, and now we come to the concrete example of our tries and Petrusha tries. And the try, well, this was the definition of the data type, just with a leaf and a node, where we just have this marker, whether this is also the end of some prefix, and then the two subtries. And so how are the isIn function defined? Well, it's pretty easy. So if you have a key string, so it's a string of booleans, a list of booleans, and you're checking whether something is in a leaf, well, that's always false. The leaf represents the empty tree. So if you're checking whether it's in a node, then you have to just see, well, what does this key string look like? If it's the empty list, then you have to return the boolean value B, because if B here is true, that means this node is also the end of some key sequence, and you have gone down to the keys, you've exhausted your key sequence here, it's empty, so really this is the B that you should be returning. If the B here is false, of course, then you return false, because it means you have a key sequence that ends in an internal node that was not is not marked. So this is the end of the journey. If, on the other hand, you haven't completely looked up all the keys yet, all the elements, so this is a non-empty list here with the first element k and then the remainder x, what you do is you recursively check whether x, the remainder list, is in, well, and now you have to make a decision. If the key here is true, then you take the right branch. If the key here is false, then you take the left branch. Any questions? No. Then let's assume that one is understood. The insert function is similarly easy. Let's just do maybe one case of the insert function. Let's just look at it on the breakdown. Oops. That's not what I wanted. So let's just look at the last case here. The insert function takes a key list and wants to insert it into a node. And if the key list is non-empty, well, what you do is you definitely have to insert that key into a subtree. That node that you've got here is not affected because the key is at least one bit longer. So you keep that node B. And then what you apply it to, you apply it to a pair of subtrees. And the pair of subtrees consists either of the left subtree, and then you insert into the right subtree with the remainder sequence KS, or the other way around. And of course, into which subtree you insert, that depends on K, the first element of your key list. So you just, the key list dictates into which subtree you go down into. So the try is easy enough, and it's an implementation of a set. So we have to prove that it satisfies the property that we had here. we have to prove that under the assumption of the invariant, there is no invariant on the try, so this is trivial, we can just drop this. But we have to prove this. Now, this may look a bit funny that, it may look like we should be proving two things, and strictly speaking, we should. We should have an abstraction function, and we should have an isIn function and an insert function. We don't have an abstraction function. Why don't we have an abstraction function for our try? Because the isIn function doubles as an abstraction function. If you look at the isIn function, what is the type of isIn? The type of isIn for the try would be try to bool list to bool. And what should be the type of an abstraction function? Pretty similar. It should also take a try and then give us back a bool list set. Because it maps the try up to a set. And in this case, the set contains the elements which are lists of booleans. Now, this is almost the same thing. A set of something or a function of that something to bool. This is just the predicate representation. This is the set representation of the same thing. And so we have taken a shortcut here. We didn't define both an abstraction function. We just reused the isIn function. That was simply for convenience. In general, that's not recommended because it could be that the abstraction function is mathematically quite simple, but this isIn function could be some complicated algorithm, and then you don't want to replace the simple mathematical function by some complicated algorithm that will just complicate your proofs. Here, we did it for simplicity, and therefore that means we don't have to prove anything about the relation of isIn and under the abstraction function, because isIn is the abstraction function, and we only have to prove the law for the insert. And so now let's see, why is that an instance of the law that we should be proving? So in general, what we want to prove is in general, ignoring the invariant, it's that the abstraction function applied to the operation, let's fix that to insert, of AS in T should be the same as so this is as the abstract function. Well, what's the abstract function? The abstract version of the insert function is just the union operation with a single element. So on here, we have union of AS union with the abstraction of the T. This is what we really should be proving. But now remember, we have, instead of the abstraction function, we have just used the isIn function. So that's why on the left-hand side we have the isIn. And since isIn requires another argument, namely the element BS that you are asking whether it's in there, I'm also asking now on both sides. So this has become the same as, or has been replaced by, isIn of insert AST, and then you ask, is BS in there? And that should be the same as asking whether BS is in here, but by simple set theoretic laws, that's the same as asking BS is the same as AS, or BS is in there. So that's why we could prove the original requirement is the same as proving AS equals BS or BS is an element, but yeah, is in TBS. So this rather ad hoc looking law is just a slight variation on what we should be proving according to the general data refinement idea. So this is easy to prove. Now, Patricia tries, and relating them back to tries. So we have a data type definition with a leaf node and a node that contains a prefix, the shared prefix of everything in that subtree, and then a marker. Are we? All, is this also the end of some prefix? And then the two subtrees. So the isIn function is fairly easy. Let's just look at. I think I don't have enough time to look at all these functions. So let's just look at the not the isIn function, the more interesting one, the insert function, because we didn't do that. There was a question about how the insert function works early on, and so we can answer that question by programming the insert function. So we use an auxiliary function called split, and split takes two lists and gives you back three lists. And what's the specification? It should work so that the ZS is the longest common prefix of X's and Y's, and the X's prime and Y's prime is just what is left of X's and Y's after you remove that longest common prefix. So, example would be split of, A, B, and AC. That would be the triple A, which is the longest common prefix, and then the remainder B and C. And this is the auxiliary. I mean, it's easy to program that. I don't want to show you that. And we're going to use that function in performing the insert operation on the tries. So, how does that work? Well, it's a bit much. We will just look at one case, but let's just consider how it works for that subcase. So we now have a function insert P on the Patricia level that takes, and we focus on the case where it takes a node of some prefix and then some indication whether we're also at the end of some string, and then two subtrees, L and R. And we're inserting something. Now let me get this right. Yep, here we are. The insert takes what we're trying to insert comes first. So this is KS. And any suggestions what we start with? What do we do? I'm not interested in the program, I'm just asking for the conceptual idea. Yeah.
I search for the long prefix between L and R and go to that side of the try. And then split the corresponding list and go to that side of the try and
Yes. Can you be a bit more precise? What arguments do you call split with?
KS and R. L.
That's a tree, L.
But this thing have list in L.
There are very many lists in L. So, I mean, what do you mean by the list in L?
Well, L itself is a prime.
Yes.
So it has one list in itself on L.
Look at the definition of what this is, what a tri is. So, what do you mean a tri has a list? I mean, this could be, this L could be some large data structure. It could also be a leaf node, you don't know.
Okay, I assume it's not a leaf.
Ah, no, you shouldn't assume that. I think you're just being too complicated. Split is okay. KS is also okay, but what else? Sorry. Yes, because PS is the prefix of that subtree we're looking at. So you look, here you have the key, here you have the prefix, and so you're now looking what is the longest common prefix between KS and PS, because that's where we have to have another branch.
Yes.
Yeah. So we do a case split of, I don't think actually, no, because split doesn't take a pair, I'm wrong. It just takes two things, PS, KS, and then we will just look at one of the cases, namely this one. No, that's the wrong one. I want to do it in this order. I mean, it doesn't matter which order. So this, we will get four possible situations. You'll always have some longest common prefix between the two, but then it depends, the list empty here and here, or is one empty and the other non-empty, and all four cases lead to different behaviors. And we're looking at the case where the list that is left over, in the key that's left over after this splitting of the longest common prefix with the longest prefix with PS is non-empty, but there's also this PS is also non-empty. So that means essentially we have a key and a prefix, and they go along up to some point. They have a common prefix, and then they split. And that's where you have to introduce a split into the tree. So what's the prefix of that new tri that you're creating?
Prefix.
That's the common prefix. That much is still there, so we can, we should maintain that compression. Now, how about the B? Are we? Is this the end also of a string, or is that doesn't? Yeah, true. Or, no, it's false. Yeah. So, when do we get true here? In which of these cases? Can you tell me? What do we have to have here and here in order to get a created node with a true?
If one list is empty.
Which of the two?
If the PPS prime is empty.
No, if the key list is empty, because then you're inserting a key and you've really got to the end of it. You've completely exhausted the key list. That means you're now inserting a key that terminates at that point, and then you have to set this to true. I mean, it's in one of the other cases. You may also set it to true because it was set to true earlier in one of the other cases, but to really inserting, creating a new true node would be only once you've exhausted the key list, because then you're at the end of the key. Yeah.
But shouldn't, if we add a node,
I mean, that's always, this is really the character says, we have inserted some key that terminated here, so to speak, with this prefix. And then, well, here we have an if-then-else. And what we branch on, okay, then I'll put it there. If k, then it's one pair, and otherwise, because you have the left and the right subtree, and otherwise it's the other pair. I could introduce it with a let. So that tp equals something, and tk equals something. The p and the k are obviously reminiscent of the this part and this part here. So we will create two nodes, and then we will something, and TK is also a node with something, and then we will either use TPTK or the other way around, TK, TP. And this is why we're asking about K, and then if K is true, then we get this one, where the true case is always where on the right. So the K is the one where the key leads into, and the P is the one where this remainder leads into. And it doesn't matter, you could also branch on P instead of K, but then you would have to swap the two cases. Because we know that P and K must be different, otherwise they would be part of the prefix, and so P is just the negation of K. So what is the, let's first look at this one. What is the node that we create for the key subtree? What does that look like? Which prefix will that contain? Yeah.
Q as a pen K.
Q as prime. We have the K is gone because that's used as a branching bit. So it's K as prime. Then true or false here? I'm not sure myself. Okay. Okay. That's interesting.
The data structure, are we always storing the longest common prefix or are we storing the whole prefix? Because I thought that we should store Q as K and Q as ZK.
We're not storing in each node the complete prefix from the root, but only what is left. So here, if you look at this try, well, you can't. Oh, yes, you can. Here you can see it. See, we have LL only.
Yeah,
and not the A.
Misconception of the data structure.
Yes. So that's why it's only K is prime. And here, what we have when we are, it's actually not difficult. If we after we have come to the end of KS prime, we've come to the end of the key. That means we have inserted a key. That means what should we have here, true or false? True, exactly. Yeah. And what do we put in the subtrees? And here, of course, it's similarly, the prefix is PS prime. And what do we put in the subtrees? It's for. Yeah, what is the flag and what are the subtrees? No. Right. So because we have we have a branch in the middle of this prefix, but the rest of the prefix still leads into this situation. So we still have a B here, and we still have the LR here. Now, and then there are all the other cases, the four other cases. Now, I'm not going to go through all of them, but it's a good exercise in getting things wrong. So if you write this down the first time, there are invariably things that you get wrong. But we can prove that it works, or once you've got to it corrected, then you can actually show that it works correctly. But you need an abstraction function for that to relate the Patricia tries back to the original tries. The abstraction function is fairly easy. The leaf nodes are just mapped directly onto each other. And if you have a Patricia node, it's mapped to a try node, and recursively the subtrees are mapped. And you then afterwards apply a function prefix try to it, which I'm not showing you. It just takes the try and puts this prefix list in front of the try. So essentially what it does, if you look at this example here, in this example, we have here the LL, and then you would first convert the subtry here, which is just a leaf node, and then you would put the LL in front, which is just means you put this long sequence of single edges in front of the try. So it's just an auxiliary function that produces the a sequence of edges, each with one element of PS. So I'm not showing you that. And then you can show that the isIn function correctly implements it's correctly implemented, and the insert function is also correctly implemented. So this is now really the this is the way it should be. But now we come to the last step, and this is the most interesting one of them, where we now focus on a specific Boolean lists, namely lists that represent words, 38-bit words or whatever, it doesn't matter, but we just want to store words of a fixed length in our try. And that means that we can represent things much more compactly, because we know there's this fixed length, everything fits into whatever it is. And this is the representation that we're choosing. So we have, again, a leaf node. And then we have this more complicated node. So this W refers to the word. And this more complicated structure has 1, 2, 3, and then this pair field. So it's got first two words, and then the Boolean and the subtree we're used to. We understand what they are. But what is this? This has something to do with the prefix. But now we're representing the prefix compactly in one word. And we're now doing something that you had misunderstood, namely we're now representing the whole prefix. Since it's one word, it doesn't matter whether we just represent some of the bits or all of the bits of the prefix. I mean, it takes the same amount of space, because in contrast to a list, a word always has a fixed length, and so we can afford the luxury of representing the complete prefix. Now, I'll give you an example of what this looks like, what these two fields are supposed to look like. So I'm explaining an invariant on the two fields. So the two fields are that one I call P for prefix, and the second one I call M for mask. And so if you have a prefix, P, what should that look like? What should that word look like? Well, really, here is the prefix. And then everything else is zero. All the leading bits are zero. And we are using a little endian representation, so we will actually, when we go through the word bit by bit, we will go through the word from the least significant bit to the most significant bit. So here we have a prefix of all the words that are in this all the words that are in this subtree have to start with this prefix, starting from the least significant bit. And then we have another word, and that's the mask. And the mask looks like this. And exactly where the prefix ends, it has a single one bit. And then it's zero everywhere else. What is this single one bit? That's the branching bit. Because this is supposed to be the coming prefix, and then this is the position where we are now distinguishing whether you're going to the left or to the right subtree. And you have to somehow encode that information. We didn't need that information earlier because we had lists, and lists have a length, and it differs depending on how long the list is. Now everything is just a word, so you don't know how long this prefix is. And you can't search for the first one either, because the prefix might start with, might have a zero here. So you really need some information about where is that branching bit. How long is the prefix? Essentially, that's what this bit encodes. And then we'll use bit twiddling to perform the necessary checks. But this is the invariant you should keep in mind, what the two fields, the first one is the P field, the second one is the M field, what they should look like. And then, depending on this intuition, we can figure out what the operations are supposed to do that operate on this data structure. And in addition, we will have a function to-bit list that's part of the word library that takes a word of some length and gives you a list of booleans. So that's just a library function that we can use in, not in programming. We don't want to program with this function. This is just a function that relates our words into bit bool lists. We don't want to do that. We want to operate on the word level. But this function is necessary to write the abstraction function from the word level to the higher level of our tries or Patricia tries. And so this is the one I want to look at with you. The isIn function, and where is it? Here we are, yep. Yeah, of course, nothing is in a leaf. And in a node, the structure looks like this. If you want to check whether some key, which is also a word, is in this node representing some subtree, well, first you have to check If B is true, so that means you're also at the end of something here, then you just compare the key with the prefix. Remember that we're always storing the complete prefix. And so that means if we're at an end here, if B is true, then we can just compare the key with the prefix, and if they're identical, then obviously you have found that the key is in the tree, and if they're not identical, it's not in the tree. So that's the easy case, and now we have a more tricky case distinction. We say if this key matches the prefix described by this pair of words P and N, as you can see them on the board there, then you're okay, the prefix is still matching, and then you search with the recursive call here with the same key, so the key doesn't change. You always have the full key, you never chop anything off, just, and in correspondence to that, the prefix is always the full prefix, and you don't chop things off the prefix. And then you have another auxiliary function, go left, that decides, based on the mask and the key, whether to go left and the right. This is where you use that branching bit to look at one bit of the key and then decide, depending on that bit, whether you want to go left or right. And, of course, if the prefix doesn't match, then it's just false. The key is not in there. So I want to look at the auxiliary functions go left and match prefix. To explain why this word level representation is actually very efficient. You can write these functions quite nicely. So let's first look at go left. That takes, what does it take? The mask and key. And you now want to decide, well, you want to decide, is the bit indexed by this one in the key, set in the key, or is it not set in the key? How could we check that? Any suggestion what kind of bit trading we do? Yeah?
If we do an add, and yeah. Then we can check for zero or not zero.
Yeah. So you want to go left if it's zero, and right if it's not zero. So we can just check 0 equals the AND between the mask and the key. So this is the, in our word library, this is the infix word AND operation. So that's all there is to it. All the other bits are just ignored. I mean, they're just set to 0 by the AND, and you're focusing on this one bit. More interesting is the, or a little bit more tricky, is the match prefix. That takes the prefix, the mask, and the key. So now, we have the challenge that we want to check whether some given key is the same on that range up to the one. So any idea how bit twiddling can achieve that? So we have to use both P and M. In the end, of course, you want to compare with P, but you want to make sure that you only compare those bits below the one. So I'll give you a hint. It's defined by P equals, and now we need to use another function, mask KM. So what, in order for this to make sense, what is the effect, what should the effect of this masking function be? I'm not asking how to implement it, but just what should be doing? Yeah.
It should mask k from like the position where 1 is to the end.
Yes, they should all be set to 0. Sorry, yes, yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. So how can we achieve that?
We can first do an or.
This is a bit tricky, but I'll also give a hint. This will be another and, strangely enough. But what's there?
My idea was to just that we do an XOR and then we mask off the bounded value.
I think I would prefer to take this offline. I'm not sure that it would work. So here we have something that does work, but you just need to fill in that bit. Not bit, that word. And of course, it has to be something with n. We haven't made use of n yet. Yeah.
We subtract 1 from n.
Yeah. Because what happens if you subtract 1 from n is that this turns into a 0, and all of these turn into 1s. So that's it essentially. And it's at this kind of level that you need to work. Now, the correctness theorem is in blue, but I haven't actually proved it yet, or rather, I have proved something, but I've also got a number of sorries in there yet in my proof, so this is definitely work in progress. So it just looks like this, that the isin function on the word level is the same as the isin function, some other isin function, and you have applied an abstraction function from the word level to some other level. So what's happening here is, and you can't use the original k, you can't just use the bit list. So this is on this level we are using words, and here we're using Boolean lists, bit lists, and the abstraction function abstracts from one to the other. So this is a try that we get out, a Patricia try. That's the abstraction of our word level try, and this is also an abstraction where we abstract the key. So we have actually two things to abstract here, not just the data structure, but also the key, because the keys have now been encoded as well into words. But here you have to use a reverse function as well, because of the fact that this depends because of this arithmetic operation, the n minus 1, of course it depends on the fact that we have a little endian representation, and therefore we have to reverse it. Now, what is this is in L? The point is that we're using an intermediate version of Patricia tries, where the nodes contain complete prefixes. So, the original Patricia try, and the version that we're using here in the middle to get from the word level to the the abstract Patricia tree is one where we always have the complete prefix in each branch. So here we wouldn't just have LL, but we would have all there. And here we wouldn't just have can, we just wouldn't just have the N, but we would have the complete prefix can there. And that corresponds to the fact that here we are always carrying the complete prefix around with us. If you were to drop that idea and you say, oh, we have just the prefix that's currently relevant and we zero out the rest, that would make things actually harder. So it's just because the way things work on the bit level that we are using this complete prefix representation. But we haven't used that so far on the Patricia level, so we had to introduce this auxiliary level, and this is what the full refinement hierarchy looks like now. We have looked at this refinement step where the try is implemented by a Patricia try, and here we now are at the bottom level with a Patricia try based on words, and in the middle we have a data structure that I haven't introduced yet. But actually, the data structure is the same as this data structure. So it's the same type. It's just that we're storing different things in the prefix. We're storing longer prefixes, but the type definition doesn't change. The function definitions, of course, change. And I'm not showing you this intermediate level. I'm just showing you this level. And I'm showing you the whole hierarchy as an example of really the stepwise refinement process where you get rid of more and more, or you introduce more and more implementation detail. And of course, you have to know where you're heading. So the fact that you need these intermediate tries where you keep complete prefixes in the nodes, that only makes sense because you know you're heading for this word level representation where you're doing the same thing. And I would just like to also look at how to write out the invariant. So you can see I'm only presenting you fragments of code because the full code is just too much. But I want to look at some interesting fragments. And so we have seen some of the code and seen that these operations, like prefix matching, can be implemented efficiently. Now I also want to look at some of the auxiliary functions, like the invariant and the abstraction function. And I think I will just look at the invariant. So how do we how do we define the invariant on these on these word level tries? This is the definition. So a leaf is always okay. And when is a node okay? Well, we introduce two additional or auxiliary invariants, invariant for the prefix and invariant for the mask, and then recursively the invariant for the left and for the right subtree. So the question is, what are these invariants? And we now have to formulate this intuition that we have about the bit level as a function, as a predicate on the prefix and the predicate on the mask. So let's first look at the mask, invariant mask. How could you express this? Typically what you do is you will abstract the word to a bit list, to a Boolean list, so you apply the to BL operator to it, because then you're on a level where you have a lot of theory. Lists are one of these fundamental data structures. You have a lot of list manipulating functions, so it's best to abstract our word into a list representation and then express what we're trying to say on the list level. So to be L of n. So we should now express that the list width that we have is of this form. Any suggestions? A nice way of saying that this list here has this form here. Yeah.
A count true is one. Count true.
But we don't have a count true function. Think of some list library function that would give you this. What are the fundamental list library functions that you know? Map doesn't help, fold doesn't help. There's another one. Filter, yep. So if you filter out all the false bits, there should just be a single true remaining. So, this is not a unique, what you were suggesting is perfectly fine too, but I'm just showing how not to invent new functions, but use the library to program what you want. Well, not programming, fine. So, filter of 2BL, of M. And the result should just be a single true bit. And what is the filter function?
Identity.
Yes, right. Yeah. And so let's also look at the invariant for the which looks at the prefix, but it will also consult the mask. But we're really fixing on the prefix and assuming that the mask does what it's supposed to do because that is required in the other part. And I will start out with let. Let's finish this. Where are we? There. Let PS equals 2 bit list of P and MS equals 2 bit list of M and N equals something, namely the length of something, you have to tell me what. And then in, yeah. So what's the idea? We want to check whether our prefix and the mask, basically, whether they fit together. What does that mean? It means that we don't want any, we just want zeros beyond the one, and that's the only requirement. I mean, below this one here, any prefix can appear, but above it, there should only be zeros. That's what we're trying to express. So, we will get some list that corresponds to this upper part by some computation, and then we want to check that there are only zeros in there. There could be multiple zeros, of course. So how do we do that? There's a function called set that takes a list into a set. What we're applying it to, that remains to be seen, and what should come out if the list inside here is that list, then what set should come out?
The secret set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so we now have to figure out how to isolate this thing here. I guess if you have a long list and you want to take something, you either take or drop. I have decided that we want to, where is it? To drop. From the original list, the P, which has now become PS. Oh. I think actually, see, that's my proof is incomplete, and I think what I've got here is slightly wrong. So if we drop something from... actually it's correct. Yeah. What do we want to drop from? Do we want to drop something from PS? Because PS is the 2-bit list of P, and so... If we convert this into a bit list, then the least significant bit will be at the end, and we want to drop something at the end. So I guess we should really be taking... this should really be a take rather than a drop. And we want to take, how many elements? Well, we need to figure out the position of that one, and then, is it one more element, I think, n plus one, I think, we want to take n plus one of PS. And n should be the length of what? N is the length of this part here, the zeros. I think either I'm now confused or I was confused when I wrote this down. What we do is, in order to figure out what the position of this one is, we take this list, but... it's correct, yeah. And we drop all the zeros, and then we measure how long that remaining list is. So we start from the beginning, and there's a combination called drop while.
But if you add plus one, then you have to take while or not.
We want to know the length of the first part.
Okay, yeah. Take while and lambda b dot not b of ms, and then plus minus one, this should work out. You can see, you can easily get into mistakes here. So don't treat the definitions that you see here. This is probably wrong, but when I eventually get the proofs to work, then I'll commit the right version. Yeah.
I have a question if this is strong enough, because with this we don't know if the masking bit is at the right position. We only know that it's not like too far to the right, but it could be too far to the left.
There is no wrong position for the masking bit. The only requirement for that these two things fit together, the only requirement is that this masking bit must be to the left of that masking bit over here, you must have only zeros. That's the only requirement. What's in there doesn't matter.
And then another question, if this is strong enough, because if we are at a certain node, then we want that the end bit requires the depth at where we are.
Well, the depth, you see, is variable, so there's no relationship between... You don't this branching bit doesn't move one by one, but it moves in jumps. That's the whole efficiency consideration. So. Anyway, I think we're coming to the end because I have to give you time to fill out the evaluation, the online course evaluation. And so that's why I want to stop early today. But of course, so this may not be 100% right. I think it's close to the truth, and I will work on getting it right, and I will commit the right version and correct the slides accordingly. The important point is that you've got that you've got the intuition of what's going on here. You had a question? Or? Okay, so you're not quite sure whether this is correct.
I think it's important that the child knows the project is what to the right.
It's possible that I don't need that. Yes, I don't want to rule that out. That the branching bit keeps moving to the left. Since I haven't done the complete proofs, and in particular I haven't done the bit twiddling parts of it, it's quite possible that I've missed that. Thank you. Yeah. And that may also answer your question. So then let's just skip to the end. And I haven't done the insert function either yet. That's another bit of headache. Just the last question it's a fairly easy question. Are there any further space optimizations that we can do on this data structure, on the word level? Quite a simple one. And it concerns the, in the node, where is it? Think about this bit there. Is there any way we could get rid of it? Well, there's always a trivial transformation. Whenever you have a constructor that contains a Boolean field, you can always turn it into two different constructors, one where the value is implicitly true and one where the value is implicitly false. So that's what you can do here, but that's not quite as naive as that, because if the Boolean value is true, you can optimize further. Because then you can drop some stuff for those nodes where the Boolean value is true. Because then we know what these will look like, these subtrees. Because all words have equal length. So that means once you got to the end, you really got to the end, there is no interesting subtribe, then these two will just be leaf nodes. And so this is what you can turn the data structure into. You have three constructors, a leaf constructor, a single constructor that says, oh, I contain exactly that word, and then you have the original node constructor, but without the Boolean bit. So this is the case where the Boolean bit is false, which means you haven't got to the end yet, and there are subtrees. And this is the one where it's true, and you have got to the end. And they're all of the same length, that's the point. Yeah.
And you also, for space optimization, couldn't you just change the mask to an 8-bit word, because you only need to represent 32 positions?
But the mask, if the mask doesn't look like this, then you can't pull these tricks.
Yeah, you have to transform first.
So yes, yeah. So that means
it would be very easy to prove that it's correct, your transformations.
Yeah, you could, I mean, but then you have to do that every time you take your look up, you have to perform this translation.
Yeah, it's running time, this gets slower, but space gets better.
Yes, that's true. And you're saving a whole word. So you can, in fact, that's quite a substantial saving on this data type. So it's like a almost a quarter or something. So indeed, yes.
You, oh, well, hang on.
And you're representing him? I think what, because of alignment problems, you'll probably not say anything. If you replace a word by a byte.
It probably depends on how the compiler lays out the memory.
It does, yeah. So that's also why it's very difficult to make precise predictions on that without measurements. Okay, so the point of this lecture was really to familiarize you with this rather simple data structure, the tri and the Patricia tri, and then to show you an example of a more sophisticated data refinement step where you suddenly represent things at the word level. And that's really all I wanted to show you today. And so you at least have 10 minutes for the course evaluation. So see you next week, or rather, you probably won't see me next week. Peter Lammich will take over for at least 2 weeks now, and I will come back after that. So enjoy the weekend.
My XOR idea was the idea wäre dann gewesen. P XOR M und dann Klammern und dann und nicht M. Und dann wäre es effizienter, weil man keine Substraktion macht.
Das würde ich mir hinschreiben. Dann kann
außer wobei, das Dekrement ist wahrscheinlich auch nicht so teuer. Aber.
Dann dürfen Sie es da noch hinschreiben. Wo haben wir hier Kreide? Und zwar hierfür, ja? Was ist das?
Ich weiß nicht, wie das.
Schreiben Sie zu.
Ja, wahrscheinlich zu.
Das ist das bitweise Not.
Ja.
Ja.
Okay. Also Kompliment.
Kompliment. Ja. Das Ganze. Also da haben wir nur noch das Bit ans 1, nur das Bit 0 als an das 1. Deswegen mit dem Enden bleibt dann also.
Das Enden ist nur dazu da, besser noch umzusetzen. Weil, also XOR macht ja. Oh, das ist hier drin.
Ah, sehen Sie? Sehr ja. Spaß, wenn Sie dann schon lesen.
Bei mir ist so ein bisschen dauert, man denkt so, man hat vielleicht nicht gescheit gedrückt.
P, X, O, N. Das heißt, der Teil mit X, O, mit 0 ändert ja gar nichts. Genau. Das hier bleibt, das wird alles 1 mit das X, O. Und hier wissen wir nicht genau, was
war. Ach so, stimmt, es gibt ja 1. Ja.
Es gibt 1. Entschuldigung, nein.
Was meinst
du? 0. Nein, das gibt alles.
Ja, 0 ist 0. 0, X, O, 0 ist 0.
Ja, ich sage nur, es gibt nur 1 als
verschiedene. Genau. Also hier bleibt es einfach und wir haben nur das Problem, dass hier dann eine 1 steht und dann kann man das halt damit ausschmeißen. Also wäre meine Idee. Also es macht wahrscheinlich jetzt auch keinen großen Unterschied, aber.
Und, genau, das bleibt erhalten. Ja, richtig. Ja, ich glaube, das würde auch funktionieren. Mhm. Okay.
Aber wahrscheinlich ist das so, wenn man das ein bisschen umstellt, wahrscheinlich. Genau, wahrscheinlich irgendwie. Was macht das hier? Das ist irgendwie.
Ja, das ist nämlich gerade. Das ist ja sowas wie.
Ich frage mich halt so, ob das irgendwie für Beweise besonders gut ist, weil das ist halt irgendwie so ein. Da mischt man irgendwie dann so ein.
Das ist so eine sehr gute Frage.
Da macht man dann eine Power noch logische Operation. Das ist irgendwie wahrscheinlich.
Das kann gut sein, dass man damit sich Probleme einhandelt.
Vor allem, man hat ja auch so den Fall, theoretisch, dass das Null ist. Und dann gibt es einen anderen Flow. Und dann ist es, ich weiß nicht, was da passiert, alles in 1 wahrscheinlich. Also normalerweise dürfte es machen, wird nicht 0 sein, aber.
Eben, genau, das ist die Invariante, die sagt, das ist maßgeblich nicht null ist. Insofern muss man den Fall, glaube ich, nicht abfangen. Also muss man nicht betrachten, sondern man kriegt dann einfach die Voraussetzung bei den Beweisen durch die Invariante. Aber das ist eine interessante Variation, die, ja genau, aber was ist jetzt ähnlich? Ich habe keine Ahnung, wie x war. Das heißt doch, natürlich weiß ich das.
X war ja 1, 0, 1, 0 und dann
ist das. Nein, nein, man kann sich das noch einfach. Also x
so, umstellen.
X ist eine Addition und das ist eine Multiplikation. Also diese Struktur mit x und AND ist nämlich ein Ring.
Okay.
Und dann können Sie eben im Ring damit rechnen, wenn ich mich ganz täusche. Das heißt, Sie können wirklich p plus m.
Ja, x müsste auch plus sein, zumindest ist es so mit I.
Und das ist Multiplikation. Und dann ist es aber, ja, das ist, ja, was ist denn das? Ist das nicht, noch ist doch wahrscheinlich XOR mit 1, oder? Ja, also, ne?
Achso, wenn der XOR bei 1 wird.
Ja, also, wenn, also der 1-Vektor praktisch. Das wäre das 1 plus m. Und ich glaube, das müssten wir jetzt ausmultiplizieren.
Ah, ja,
wenn ich einmal p, das ist natürlich einfach nur p, plus p mal m, also jetzt mal n, aber das bringt natürlich jetzt auch nichts, was ich da gerade mache. Das wird ja komplizierter damit.
Naja, m mal m fällt raus.
M mal m ist L, das ist wieder m.
Ja, genau.
Ja. Achso, da haben wir n mal a. Wir haben, was, die p's, das sind die beiden p-Multiplikationen. Jetzt die m mal 1 ist m und dann haben wir n mal 1, das heißt, dann haben wir noch ein n hier. So, da haben wir 2 n, ist richtig. Und was ist jetzt x von irgendwas mit sich selbst? Das ist gerade
0.
Das ist 0. Gut, das heißt, das fällt dann insgesamt. Ja, das ist aber natürlich auch nicht besser.
Ja, das ist ja doch genau das Gleiche.
Es ist
fast. Nee, das ist nicht genau das Gleiche, aber das wäre immer wieder P. Achso, nee, das ist jetzt ein bisschen.
Nein, nein, das ist anders. Jetzt haben wir die Multiplikation zwischen P und M. Vorher hatten wir das X ja. Zwischen P und M und dann machen wir X mit P. Gut, also das hat sich nicht vereinfacht. Es ist nur die, wir haben die beiden Operatoren vertauscht, mehr oder
weniger. Aber das ist eine Operation weniger.
Weil man das noch nicht braucht.
Ja.
Ja.
Und dann, damit ist es echt billiger, weil hier hat man AND und hat man X und dann hat man NOT und hier hat man dieselbe Operation ohne das NOT.
Ja. Ja, also ich werde sicher am Wochenende Spaß haben mit diesen Beweisen und dann werde ich auch, also dann ist das hilfreich, diese andere Alternativen zu haben zu gehen hier. Ich glaube, das könnte schwierig sein.
Ja.
Oder könnte unangenehm werden, sagen wir es so.